Well, remember, we didn't get any of the calls.
Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Lila.
I'm Leo. And tonight we got some interesting news for you. Start off with.
We don't have a guest tonight, but at 8:30 we have Woody in the Rain, and then we'll finish up with some more news from 9:45 till 9. So
yeah.
From now to 8:30, you'll have news at 8:30 to 8:45. Be in the Ring with Woody, and then we'll finish off with some news.
Yeah. So,
all kinds of things going on, folks. So
all kinds of stuff.
There's another a lack for news.
Never. And we're sorry about this. I had something figured out here for you. That's okay. Let's go to this. There's a couple of really fascinating things that came up today. One is nurses are losing faith in vaccines and becoming distrustful of health authorities.
That's interesting. I mean, nurses around the world or American nurses, let's find out.
There's nurses around the country, but around the world, they know too.
This is from PreventDisease.com.
H1N1 pandemic fraud perpetrated by health authorities worldwide seemed to have backfired on those orchestrating the plot. Instead of reinforcing the claimed effectiveness of vaccination, it also created more doubt even within conventional medical practitioners themselves.
The study and vaccine titled What Lied Behind the Low Rates of Vaccinations Among Nurses Who Treat Infants is evidence of a growing resistance to vaccinating infants in the developed world. What is unfortunate is that many of these nurses refuse the vaccinations themselves, yet proceed to administer these poisons to infants to protect their employment. That is quite cowardly, contradictory, and the very least shameful, not only as health practitioner, but as a human being. The aim of the study was to identify the barriers and reasons why nurses did not vaccinate themselves against pertussis, despite the fact that pertussis vaccine is the vaccine that nurses administer to infants every day. Two major and two minor themes were identified based on qualitative methods as described in the literature. Lack of trust in health authorities. The majority of nurses in all focus groups expressed two varying degrees. Lack of trust in the health authorities regarding their recommendation to be vaccinated. This was related to the recent influenza pandemic. There was a drastic change in trust. I feel crisis in trust due to the swine flu affair. The general mistrust generated during the AH1N1 pandemic was directed to the pertussis vaccine when they were asked to vaccinate themselves. Treatment of nurses by their employer. The nurses expressed their frustration with the administration and complained of the treatment they received from the administration that had no respect for them as individuals. Some of the comments were related to the pertussis vaccine. They should treat us like human beings. We are not soldiers. Most of the comments were related to the influenza vaccine. We were threatened. We got multiple emails asking who got vaccinated, and if not, why not? Another reason, the right for autonomy. The nurses expressed strong feelings against the Ministry of Health's recommendation for healthcare workers to be vaccinated. They do not want to be told what to do and want to make the decisions themselves. Regarding pertussis, one nurse in the hospital got pertussis, and infect someone, or don't know, So then wham, all the nurses have to get immunized. So no one got immunized, and they are right. What are we? In the Soviet Russia? On principle, I am not getting vaccinated this year. That was a quote. Regarding influenza, quote, if I want to, I will get the vaccine. I'm a grown-up. I am responsible. If I want, I will get vaccinated. It will not help, whatever he says.
Within the conflict between self and profession, they wanted to be given the opportunity to decide for themselves if they get vaccinated. They knew they had to work by the book regarding the infants they treat. However, they do not accept the recommendations blindly for themselves. The line runs between me giving vaccines and receiving vaccines. I can personally be asked against vaccination, but I'm not against the national policy regarding vaccines. Whoever wants can get it vaccinated. I don't want anybody to make me get immunized. I do not want to, even if it is mandatory, even if it is pertussis, I don't want to get it. Go ahead if you want.
Mistrust of health information. Many nurses felt the information they received was not adequate and did not answer their needs. Another reason being a role model. Most nurses do not see themselves as role models and did not think they should reveal their personal behaviors or beliefs to patients who ask them about themselves. However, few nurses found the decision not to be immunized problematic, and debates between nurses started in all focus groups. Fear of side effects. The nurses reported on their experiences of side effects of vaccines. They felt that the risk of contracting the diseases and the severity were not worth the risk of being injected with a vaccine that was not in use long enough to know what the side effects were. This was directed toward both influenza and pertussis vaccines, and they felt the authorities were using them as guinea pigs. The tides are turning, and the vaccination game will end. I have no doubt that we will see the end of vaccinations one day, and it will be exposed for the barbaric practice that it is, especially on infants and children. The anti-vaccinationist ideals the nurses expressed are an indication of the resistance within medical circles. Emotions and attitudes such as fear of the vaccines and mistrust in the health authorities and leading factors in lower compliance rates. These attitudes and emotions may influence their actions toward other vaccines in the future. Eventually, physicians and medical students themselves will begin to question vaccine wisdom. The House of Cards is crumbling, and the vaccination hoax health authorities have promoted to the population is being exposed. If you believe in vaccination to prevent disease, I promise that one day you won't. I believe that, too.
So, and that was by Dave Mihalovic.
He's a naturopathic doctor who specializes in vaccine research, cancer prevention, and a natural approach to treatment. Well, he seems like a rational human being.
Yeah. So that's good. I thought that was an interesting one. That's preventdisease.com.
Well, I found it really interesting myself, just as an observation by a layperson not involved in the medical field at all. Remember the year they had the shortage of vaccinations for the flu?
Mm-hmm.
And there was no flu.
There was no flu that year. Yeah.
I found that. That told me never again to get a vaccination.
Well, we've been fighting that for years, you and I, over this, on the radio. We've been talking about it ever since H1N1 did come out, and now those vaccines were shown to be bad, and they had all kinds of problems.
And they had all kinds of mercury in them. And
they still do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they still do. They haven't taken that stuff out.
No way I would get one of those shots.
I wanted to. There's a couple others.
Homeless mother. This is.
Yeah, this is Connecticut.
Yeah, I think people should know this.
I do too. It was quite a frightening thing to do that to somebody. I thought you put somebody in jail for 5 years for sending their kid to the wrong school.
To
a better school.
To try to get a good education for their child.
She was homeless as well. You know.
Homeless mother, this is from Celebrity Gossip News. Homeless mother who sent 6-year-old son to a better school in the wrong town has been jailed for 5 years. The mother who pleaded guilty to fraudulently enrolling her 6-year-old son in the wrong school district has been sentenced to 5 years in prison. Tanya McDowell sent her son to elementary school in Norwich, Connecticut, instead of her home city of Bridgeport. The 34-year-old who was homeless when she was charged with larceny last year, said she wanted the best education possible for the boy. McDowell last week entered a plea at Norwich Superior Court under the Alfred Doctrine, which means she does not admit guilt, but concedes the state has enough evidence to convict her. Authorities told the hearing that she used a babysitter's address to enroll her son in kindergarten in Norwalk when he should have attended schools in Bridgeport, her last permanent address. She probably had no way of getting there.
She didn't live there.
Her case drew national attention and support from civil rights leaders and other advocates who wanted the charge dismissed. McDowell told police she was living in a van and occasionally slept at a Norwalk shelter or a friend's Bridgeport apartment when she enrolled her son in Norwalk's Brookside Elementary School. Police said McDowell stole $15,686 worth of free educational service from Norwalk. She also pleaded guilty to 4 counts of sale of narcotics, which will be included in her prison sentence. In a separate case, she pleaded guilty on February 7th to selling drugs. McDowell's lawyer, Darnell Crossland, said she agreed to accept a plea bargain rather than continue fighting the charges, even though she insists she is not guilty. Ms. Crossland said, "You shouldn't be arrested for stealing a free education." Mr. Crossland said, "You shouldn't be arrested for stealing a free education. It's just wrong." McDowell was sentenced to 12 years in jail, suspended after she serves 5 years and 5 years probation. I don't think she should have had any charge for that.
I got a feeling that it sounds like that was a combined.
Yeah, but I don't think she should have been charged at all for that.
I don't think,
and she probably couldn't pay it back because they said she stole it. So should people be thrown in jail for debt?
They're being done. That's actually happening.
People are going to have debtors' prisons now?
It's actually happening. And what they've done is... people are going to prison for debt now, and in many areas. What's happening is they're sending them the bills, and they're sending them, bills, and the people aren't responding to it. They're sending them bills, and sometimes they don't even send them bills.
Mm-hmm.
They just send them, a hearing notice to appear in court to settle the thing. People don't get it or they don't go, and then what happens is there's a warrant out, and they get arrested, and they've got a certain time. Violation of court, not appearing. But anyway, I don't know. There's so much crazy stuff going on. It's terrible. But maybe.
How about the corporate Olympics? I think that.
I was going to play that a little later, but that's an interesting one. Also, I wanted to talk tonight about the police prepare for all-out melee at NATO conference in May, which is in Chicago, and the Chicagoans warned to evacuate before globalists instigated riots during NATO summit.
So you have to evacuate your house or your apartment?
You have to evacuate your house because you live in Chicago, to avoid or be locked in.
Rahm Emanuel has tanks and everything else.
Well, he's a Zionist, man. That's
you could expect that.
Treat them all like Palestinians and forget about it.
That's right.
Blow them up. Jail.
They'll be very sorry they elected him mayor, I'll tell you
I'm sure they probably already are. We can go to that if you want to. Or I just wanted to, if anybody wants to hear this. This is a little short video on the corporate Olympics. 2012. I was really surprised when you hear who's actually sponsoring these Olympics corporations. They're some of the worst corporations in the world, it's really really fascinating.
So listen to this, folks.
Yep. This is by Russian TV.
It is exactly 100 days until the Olympic Games kick off in London. But critics say there's already been plenty of running for gold, with the organizers pole vaulting straight into bed with whoever's flashing the cash. their dubious backgrounds. RT's Laura Smith now reports on the mixed messages coming from the 2012 Games.
Games of the 30th Olympiad in 2012 are...
No, but you can't go to a site. You have to go directly.
No, it's
awarded to the city of London.
London Olympic slam for focus on sponsor cash at the finish line. Wouldn't you know it? That's all they care about.
Partners and sponsors for London 2012 tells a very different story.
The way the sponsors are chosen were the ones with...
This is unlistenable to... sorry, folks. It's,
yeah.
Too bad. He wasn't doing that earlier. I don't know what happened. Things get corrupted.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, maybe you could tell folks what the gist of that was.
Yeah, what they were talking about is how they don't care who's sponsoring the thing. I mean, you got Dow Chemical, you got Monsanto's, you got a major oil companies, and all the companies that are wrecking hell on the environment,
on the planet,
stealing. Everybody are sponsoring this sponsoring the Olympics over there in London. And Dow Chemical, they stated in this thing, because of the big advertising. The problems that they had in India were never quite resolved. All those people that died, they weren't allowed to put their banner up on the stadium.
Sure.
And because of the Indians complained about them being sponsors to the Olympics.
It complained about British Petroleum?
No, Dow Chemical.
Oh, Dow Chemical.
Yeah, a Bengali thing there or whatever. Remember when they gassed?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
leak killed thousands of people.
I didn't think it was Dow.
Yeah, it was Dow Chemical.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah.
So this is like free advertisements for all these,
horrible corporations.
All these corporations. It'll be viewed worldwide and just be, what are they going to do, plaster their signs up all over the place?
And
people will be wearing shirts with their names on them and all that. Is that what they're going to do?
Yep.
The biggest wallets and the least consciences. This is basically an £11 billion public taxpayer-funded advertising campaign for some of the worst corporate criminals in our world today.
First up, Dow Chemical, which never accepted blame for one of the world's worst industrial disasters, the toxic leak in Bhopal, India, that killed thousands. It's sponsoring an $11 million wrap around the stadium. After a furore, Dow's logo now won't appear on the wrap. As for the game's official electricity supplier, that's EDF.
EDF Energy are launching Green Britain Day.
One of the UK's big six energy providers, self-proclaimed green pioneer, and owner of all the UK's nuclear power stations, and their hackers.
The EDF's been convicted in France of spying on Greenpeace. They hacked.
Horrible corporations.
Get through this. It was pretty good. And I often wonder if they deliberately
corrupt all of
corrupt people look to and aspire to this sort of Olympiad ideal, not sort of grubby hacking and espionage, which is what EDF sadly is well known for.
Then there's BP.
Well, we know all about them. All the mess they've made of everything.
But you see how this thing just conveniently stops.
Yeah.
A major backer and so-called sustainability partner, despite being, according to some, one of the world's least sustainable.
Yeah, this is a bad video. And unfortunately, it was good that earlier it didn't have that problem. Anyway, let's go on to other stuff.
what we were talking about.
And then they also completely scrapped BP Solar. So any claim they had to being a leader in sustainability.
Just shut it off.
I can't. It won't sit down.
Just move the thing all the way along.
I tried to do that.
Won't shut off either.
Won't shut off.
Oh, having a little trouble here, folks.
It is exactly 100 days until the Olympic Games kick off. It is exactly.
There. Okay,
stop. Okay, fine.
Yeah, sometimes I think they corrupt those because they hack into those things,
mm-hmm.
deliberately corrupt them because they're so volatile, and they condemn so they The Israeli ones do the same. Those are bad.
Mm-hmm.
They take them right off or hack them and break
them down.
Well,
let's read about the Chicagoans that are warned to evacuate.
Yeah.
Before the NATO summit. I don't know exactly why, but I guess I think they're going to be...
I'll have to show you.
Riots or something.
Yeah, this is from the Intel Hub.
Chicagoans warned to evacuate before globalists instigate riots during NATO summit. And this is by Kurt Nemo. Residents of a Chicago condo received a letter from management last week informing them that they should move out of their homes during the up-and-coming NATO confab to be held in the Windy City next month. If the residents decide to remain, they will be subjected to a lockdown in the event of a riot or the potential of one near the building, the letter states. All access doors will be locked, including the garage door. For everyone's safety, we will be instructing anyone in the building to stay in his or her unit. Aaron Klein, writing for WorldNet Daily on Saturday, said radicals with ties to Obama plan to riot during the NATO summit.
Radicals with ties to Obama?
Said radicals with ties to Obama.
Yeah, that's weird. In August of 2011, Klein said the founders of a radical group that teaches tactics of direct action, confrontation, and intimidation were among a slew of extremist organizations, some tied to President Obama, preparing protests to coincide with major NATO and G8 summits in Chicago.
Klein quoted Joe Losbaker of the United Nations Anti-War Committee, one of the group's planning protests, who warned, "The wars and economic policies of NATO and G8 nations are not just and will be met by protest."
Loss Baker and his wife, Stephanie Weiner, worked as leaders of the Chicago New Party. It was formed by the Democratic Socialists of America, ACORN, and the Labor Union, SEIU. The
Service Employees International Union.
Yeah, I think that's what that is.
The Communist Party USA, breakaway group committee of correspondence, and the Institute for Policy Studies were also involved in forming the new party.
According to WND, Obama was a member of the now-defunct New Party, and his name was included in the party's newsletter, the WorldNet Daily. IPS is a Marxist organization formed in the early 60s. It has received funding from the banker James Warburg, the son of the infamous banker Paul Warburg. The elder Warburg was instrumental in creating the Federal Reserve and was chosen by President Woodrow Wilson to serve as one of its first members.
Doesn't it seem odd,
doesn't it,
for an international banker to fund a Marxist organization supposedly advocating the destruction of finance capital? If one understands that socialism is not share the wealth program, but in reality a method to consolidate and control the wealth, then the same paradox of super-rich men promoting socialism becomes no paradox at all, writes the late Gary Allen. Instead, it becomes the logical, even the perfect tool of power-seeking megalomaniacs, communism, more accurately socialism, is not a movement of the downtrodden masses, but of the economic elite.
Klein said Code Pink also plans to protest during the NATO and G8 summits in May. Code Pink co-founder Jody Evans was an Obama fundraiser. She sits on the leading board of Warburg's IPS. Code Pink co-founder Medea Benjamin set up Global Exchange, an anti-globalization organization that took money from globalist foundations, including the Ford Foundation, John Dee and Catherine MacArthur Foundation, Rubin Foundation, and the Tides Foundation, and Jody Evans is extremely wealthy as well.
Mm-hmm.
The Ford Foundation has a long and sordid history of collaboration with the CIA. And as Infowars.com has exhaustively documented, violence at globalist summits and confabs is invariably instigated by anarchists who report to the police. Supposed anarchist violence was used in Ottawa, Pittsburgh, London, and Strasbourg and elsewhere to disrupt and discredit anti-globalism and other political groups and provide a pretext for police violence against nonviolent protesters. Former Obama chief of staff and current Chicago mayor Rahm Emanuel has used the threat of Asian provocateur instigated riots in Chicago next month to brazenly grab more power and further militarize the city's police. On April 17th, Infowars.com reported on military exercises and preparing for the NATO summit in Chicago.
Residents are now being prepared for pre-planned and orchestrated violence by Marxist political groups and the anarchist shock troops funded by bankers and globalist foundations and coordinated by the CIA. Chicagoans may get to experience what it's like to live under military siege and martial law if they do not take the advice of condo management companies and head out of the city on May 20th.
Wow.
Boy.
This is a short video.
See if the audio is any good on this.
That sounds any good. This is regarding this thing.
Well, the city of Chicago just got a little less free.
Music.
All right, step into the ring with Woody.
Thank you, Lila. Did I hear that last person talking about putting stuffed animals in cages?
Yes, that was actually in Gaza. The Israelis had killed all of the animals and
in the zoos, yeah.
In the zoos, and they that's all they had left to show in the zoos.
They taxidermied the animals and put them in there.
It's kind of sad.
Really? That's horrendous.
They've
killed all the wildlife in Israel?
No, this was in the Gaza, which is in Palestine, which is where the Palestinian zoos, where the Palestinians live.
Both Gaza Strip. Well, it's so hot and miserable there anyway. What kind of animals are you going to have there?
Well, they did. They had lions and tigers and all kinds of animals. But
really?
Yeah,
well, that's
very sad. We'll see the article.
That's a shame. All right.
It is.
Good evening, sports fans. Watch your heads on the ropes as you step into the ring with Woody. Tonight's topics, not so saintly, world peace, world war, my trip to Fenway Park, and other baseball news. Let's get down to it. More trouble for the New Orleans Saints, as if the bounty scandal wasn't enough. We got some other stuff going on. New Orleans Saints general manager Mickey Loomis had an electronic device in his Superdome suite from 2002 to 2004 that enabled him to eavesdrop on opposing coaches, according to ESPN, citing the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of Louisiana and sources familiar with game day operations. Loomis must serve an 8-game suspension for his role in the team's bounty program. That was revealed last month. U.S. Attorney Jim Layton said he became aware of the allegations Friday. This report is 1,000% false, completely inaccurate. Apparently, they asked ESPN to provide an evidence because this was released. ESPN does a show called Beyond the Lines, and ESPN has made these allegations. Apparently, the prosecutor's office asked them to provide evidence to support their allegations. They refused. The team and Mickey are seeking all legal recourse regarding these false allegations, according to Saints spokesman Greg Bensel. NFL spokesman Greg Aiello said they had no knowledge of the allegations, but if true, Loomis may not only have broken NFL rules, but could also have violated the Federal Electronic Communications Privacy Act that prohibits electronic eavesdropping. Kind of puts a whole new spin on the Patriots scandal when they were just, you know, watching the other team do their plays and stuff. This guy's listening to communications, going back and forth from the coaches up in the booths, I would assume, to the guys down on the field. Maybe he overheard play calls and stuff like that. Now, from what I heard, I guess he said he only had it installed so he could hear the broadcast or something. He had some type of bullshit-sounding excuse. So this one might blow up and get even bigger. It just keeps going on and on for the Saints. They just can't seem to get out of the bad news. That plus, there's going to be suspensions for the guys involved in the in the other scandal that they had, in the bounty program. And according to the commissioner's office, the old Nazi excuse of "I was just following orders" will not be tolerated. So dudes are going to get suspended, and they are going to get fined, and they're not going to get away with the old "I was just following orders" or "I was just being a good team player" or whatever. So Goodell is throwing the hammer down. He already, broke it off in the organization pretty good, with the fine, loss of draft picks, coach suspended for a year, another guy suspended maybe for forever. So, it's coming down on the Saints, man. They are having some bad luck down in the bayou. So, more to come with that, you can be sure. Something else interesting over the weekend, Meta World Peace, Los Angeles Laker, said he's sorry about the elbow he threw. That's very nice. But perhaps James Harden would appreciate that apology once his brain stops doing wah, 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 wah. Because when we last saw Harden, he was sprawled on the court of the Staples Center, looking like he got hit by a truck. Anyone else know the irony of a man lying prone on the ground, a victim of the reigning holder of the NBA J. Walter Kennedy Citizenship Award? Very nice. For now, Harden will be missing the Oklahoma City Thunder. The remaining two games, according to the doctors, he's listed as day-to-day. And Meta World suspension will surely be missing from the Lakers with a sanction, the NBA, you know, according to the NBA. I watched a replay of it, and, man, the elbow this guy threw was pretty intense. I don't know. He was beating his chest because he was kind of, like, fired up because the guy just dunked on him. And he just kind of, like threw his elbow back. I think he knew the guy was behind him. I just don't think he knew the guy was that close and he was going to catch that forceful of an elbow. But either way, the intent was there. This guy is a known, he's known to be kind of a cheap player. In a summer league, I believe he broke two of Michael Jordan's ribs. He's really kind of an unpleasant individual. So, that definitely bears watching. The NBA is definitely, they're going over some old films, to figure out just how much, the suspension is going to be for this guy. But, boy, it's really kind of hard to find another film to compare this to. No, I can't recall an elbow that was thrown like this one. I mean, this was just kind of, if you got a chance to see it and watch SportsCenter, God, they play things over and over on the loop. It's worth kicking over to SportsCenter just to take a peek. I mean, the elbow this guy threw was unbelievable. And by the way, Meta World Peace is the former player, his former name is Ron Artest. Why he changed his name to Meta World Peace is absolutely beyond me. But, as you may recall, this is the guy that was kind of at the center of that big fight in Detroit where the players went up into the stands and stuff.
Yeah.
So, he's kind of known to the league as, he's a guy that enjoys getting in trouble, and he is definitely a troublemaker. So we'll just have to wait and see how hard the league comes down on him. I think, God, I don't know, a 10-game suspension wouldn't be out of the, and that includes playoff games. I mean, if you don't like it, too bad. Don't be throwing elbows like that, dude. That is seriously ridiculous. There's no need for elbows to be thrown like that. And like I said, they rerun it on SportsCenter. If you get a chance, just take a look at what I'm talking about. Okay, moving forward. I was in deep in enemy territory over the weekend. I was in Fenway Park. They had some type of celebration up there where they brought 200 players of the past out onto the field. Frankly, I could give a shit. I didn't show up for that ceremony. I don't care about Red Sox of the past, present, or future. I got there for game time, first pitch, 3:15. I wore my Jeter jersey and a New York Yankee World Series cap, and not one of those cowards up in Boston talked any junk to me. I was very surprised. I was walking in the tunnel to buy some hot dogs, which were absolutely horrible, and some guy yelled something down to me. I couldn't exactly hear what it was. Had I probably would have turned around and said something. But I thought I was going to catch a lot of junk in Fenway Park for, sporting the Yankee colors. And let me tell you, very few Yankee fans at that game on Friday. If a Yankee got a hit and you didn't see it, you didn't know the Yankee got a hit. I mean, it was just dead silent anytime the Yankee did anything. Obviously, the Red Sox did something, the place went crazy. I mean, the place was just full of Red Sox fans. I mean, I didn't see one person wearing a Yankee jersey. I saw a hat here or there, but that's not what I wanted to get to. What I want to get to is the state of the Red Sox. They have a lot of problems right now, and I mean a lot of problems. Their pitching is garbage. Their manager is at odds with the team, and he's at odds with the organization. He's already fighting with the general manager. I don't think he has the respect of the team. Pedroia came out and said something to the effect of,
you know, that might go in Japan, but we don't play that here in Boston. He needs to understand that, so on and so forth. I think what the players need to understand is that he is the manager and they are the players. I just don't think they understand that. Part of the problem is, this is just my guess, what I see as part of the problem is they haven't broken up any of the team. They haven't minused anyone from the equation that matters. In order for the dynamics of that locker room to change, you got to get rid of either Beckett, Youkilis, or Lester. If you get rid of one of those three, I think the other ones will shape up and realize that they got a good thing going there in Boston and kind of fly straight. But they haven't broken up, you know, because the locker room is still the same as it was last year. You got the same guys who were drinking beer, the same guys who were eating fried chicken, the same guys who weren't respecting their manager, who had no problem throwing them under the bus after they got rid of them. And I think that, you know, I don't care if Bobby Valentine's the manager or Joe Torre or whatever, they're not listening to him. And Valentine came out on Monday and said, you know, it's my fault. I'm not working hard enough. I've made a few mistakes, yada, yada, yada. Frankly, I think he just turned around and put a huge bullseye on his back. He's made it even easier for his detractors to get rid of him by putting it on himself. I think Valentine is a good manager. They've kind of hamstrung him a great deal by not making improvements, especially in the pitching department. You know, they made no improvements at all for the starting pitching, although, you know, starting pitching is at a premium right now, but they certainly made no step forward. You know, they got some injuries right now that are killing them. Ellsbury, you know, he seems like he's going to be like a Trot Nixon kind of player, perennially injured. You know, great when he's playing, but injured a lot. Their closer, whom they signed, who was not that great a closer anyway, Bailey, I mean, he's pretty much done for the year. As I said before, they don't know what to do with Bard. Valentine wants him to be the closer. The organization wants him to be a starter. It's kind of like a Java Chamberlain thing, and they really need to fix that immediately. You know, if you make Bard a closer, that's great, but he throws a straight fastball, and I would love for him to be the closer because he will get hammered, mark my words. There's going to be more trouble to come in Boston. We'll see, you know, at the halfway point at the All-Star game where they are. I know it's early. And, you know, and to say, you know, a team is done at this point already is crazy, especially in baseball. It's a long season, but they got a lot of problems both on the field and off the field, and that makes it twice as hard to win. You know, if your locker room sucks but you guys are winning on the field, who gives a shit? But if you're not winning and your locker room is shitty too, man, it just makes for, you know, bad karma. And I think the first thing that we'll end up seeing in Boston, I would assume, you know, the first shot over to bow at Bobby Valentine from the organization, I assume, you know, if the Yankees had played them on Sunday and swept them, they would have fired probably one of Bobby's coaches. And I think that's what the first step will be. You'll see one of Bobby's coaches get fired, whether it be a pitching coach, a hitting coach, first base guy, third base. Somebody's going to get fired. They're going to have to do something to shake the team up, or they're going to make some kind of trade or something. I don't know. We'll see. But it definitely bears watching. The Boston media is brutal. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what goes on in Boston this year. Very interesting. I have a lot of good feelings about the Yankees right now. Derek Jeter is absolutely on fire. He started the season super hot. He seems like he gets a hit to start every game. I mean, it's fantastic. He's playing great. He looks great. You know, that's very good. Teixeira's finally swinging the bat. I mean, you know, things are looking good for the Yankees. The pitching is a little, you know, not really fantastic right now. A couple guys, you know, aren't looking that great. But I tell you, Nova looked fantastic on Friday. And Andy Pettitte is coming. And I think Garcia is going to go to the bullpen, or they might just waive him or something. So we'll just have to wait and see. And speaking of Pettitte, this is U.S. District Court Judge Reggie Walton ruled that Roger Clemens' former teammate Andy Pettitte may not disclose the source of human growth hormone he admitted to using in 2002. Pettitte, in the midst of a comeback, obviously with the New York Yankees, still will be permitted to testify about his association with Brian McNamee, who he has previously said supplied the drug. Clemens' defense attorney, Rusty Hardin, argued successfully, finally this guy did something right, because I think he's a garbage lawyer, just my personal opinion, that the 16-person jury, including four alternates, that was seated Monday night assumed guilt by association if Pettit were to name McNamee. Prosecutor Steve Durham argued that the credibility of Mr. Pettit is critical in this trial, and the elimination of his testimony would paint a distorted picture. Wow, I can't believe Pettit's not going to be able to say that. That's really a good thing for Clemens. You know, Clemens is just, he's had a lot of bad legal advice. I don't know. I would be surprised if he beats the government on this one. I don't think the government was that well prepared last time around. I think, you know, the size of the prosecution is twice as big this time. The witness list is extremely extensive. As I said, it was 100 people long. You know, I think they'll successfully prosecute Clemens this time. I would be surprised if they didn't. Boy, it would be a hell of a waste of money. Frankly, it's a lot of waste of money anyway. You're wasting millions of dollars because some pro baseball player did steroids and didn't admit to it at Congress. Really? Really? That's what you're spending millions of dollars on? Where there's some guy that plays a fucking kids game did juice or not? Really? This country just, it boggles the mind. You wonder why we're in such a huge deficit, because we spend money on stupid shit like this. I want to know whether Roger Clemens did steroids or not. Really? Come on, who cares? They all did juice, far as I'm concerned. Why else would Barry Bonds retain so much respect from all of the players in the league if no one did juice and they only thought Barry Bonds was the only one? None of the players would respect Barry Bonds because they'd be like, oh, he juiced up. It doesn't count. But all the players bow down to Barry Bonds like he walks on water. You know why? Because they were all juicing too, and they don't know what the deal is. So, you know, who cares? Really, who cares? Millions of dollars the government is spending to prosecute Roger Clemens on something that he's only going to do a couple of months on. Shit, Bonds got house arrest. What are they going to do to Clemens? Ludicrous, the amount of money the government is spending on something that, you know, the average person doesn't even care about. I mean, a sports fan, it's of interest, but do you really care? I mean, come on. Anyway, you know, the Clemens thing is always interesting, and, you know, we're just going to have to, you know, wait and see what happens. So that's it for this week. Shout out to all my woodheads out there, Ron, Mark, Leo, Dino, Troy, Greg at AFS, everyone at the Northeast Athletic Club, my partner, Money Mike. The weather's getting kind of nice. Let's enjoy it. That's it for this week.
Thank you, Woody.
Hello, Sonia.
BC.
Executions and, you know, involvement.
Well,
yeah, no, Woody was right on that, boy, I'll tell you.
We were just talking while the music was playing. We had to agree with Woody on, you know, why spend millions of dollars prosecuting Roger Clemens when the Attorney General lied before Congress? As well as BP executives.
And the president lies in front of Congress. Everybody who goes in front of Congress lies like a rug, all right?
And the only one they choose to prosecute is some baseball player?
Yeah, I mean, for juicing, I mean, that's absolutely...
He didn't hurt anybody.
No, he didn't cause a war, you know?
He won a baseball game.
He hit a ball.
Yeah,
you know?
So...
Unbelievable.
So we have to agree with him.
Congress is insane.
Where was that thing that people call Ron Paul crazy? That looked interesting.
That was just a thing that I put up. People who call Ron Paul crazy are either people who have never heard him speak, blind faith establishment Democrats, blind faith establishment Republicans, people who love war, people who love income tax, people who love dictatorship, people who do what the media tells them to do, and all of the above. Those are the crazy people.
That's cute. Very, very cute. Somebody send that to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Thank you for sending it. It's really good.
Ron Paul There are a lot of Ron Paul supporters.
On Facebook?
Yeah. And you send me a lot of news, and I usually post a lot of the stuff that I see over the week on Facebook, on my Facebook group. Here's an interesting one. I thought was interesting anyway, but hundreds of economists agree marijuana legalization could save the U.S. economy.
Oh, of course it could. There are lots of things that could.
$13.7 billion per year. and hundreds of millions of dollars.
And you'd have a lot of healthier people. It wouldn't be so sick.
Good, yeah.
Or in pain.
It's coming.
This is from Natural News, and it's by Jonathan Benson, who's a staff writer. Marijuana prohibition currently costs taxpayers billions of dollars a year to enforce and accomplishes little or nothing beneficial in terms of economic benefit. On the contrary, legalizing marijuana would not only save taxpayers billions of dollars a year in unnecessary costs, but it would also jumpstart the economy to the tune of $100 billion a year or more, some say. In an open letter written to the President, Congress, state governors, and state legislators, more than 550 economists, including several Nobel laureates, draw attention to a report authored by Professor Jeffrey A. Miron that highlights the potential economic benefits of marijuana decriminalization, entitled The Budgetary Implications of Marijuana Prohibition. The report states that legalizing, taxing, and regulating marijuana would do wonders to reduce inflated budgets and generate new revenue streams.
Replacing prohibition with a system of taxation and regulation would save $7.7 billion per year in state and federal expenditures on prohibition enforcement and produce tax revenues of at least $2.4 billion annually if marijuana was taxed like most consumer goods, say the economists. However, marijuana were taxed similarly to alcohol or tobacco, it might generate as much as $6.2 billion annually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Plus, you'd be saving the $7.7 billion in expenditures. On,
yeah.
So you'd really be...
$14 billion.
$14 billion ahead of the game.
Yeah.
As many as 60 million Americans are already estimated to be spending upwards of $110 billion a year on marijuana. The mass majority, which ends up in the hands of organized crime units. If marijuana were legalized, honest citizens could grow and sell it instead, which would inject new life into the flailing economy and redirect billions of dollars in cash flow from criminals to legitimate growers. At a minimum, this debate will enforce advocates of current policy to show that prohibition has benefits sufficient to justify the cost to the taxpayers, forego tax revenue, and numerous ancillary consequences that result from marijuana prohibition, add the economist.
Marijuana prohibition benefits big pharma, prison system. If marijuana were legalized nationwide, however, the drug industry and the prison system, much of which has now been privatized, would suffer greatly. And this, of course, is one of the primary reasons why these special interests are working hard to squelch all efforts to legalize marijuana at the national level. In fact, some of the biggest proponents to stopping marijuana is the liquor companies.
I was going to say the alcohol.
Yep. According to a 2009 report published on Now Public, the United States incarcerates the most individuals per capita compared to any other country in the world. And the war on drugs, which continually targets marijuana users and dealers, is largely responsible for making America the most imprisoned nation in the world. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, 30 to 40% of all current prison admissions involve crimes that have no direct or obvious victim other than the perpetrator, says a 2008 DOJ report. The drug category constitutes the largest offense category, with 31% of all prison admissions resulting from such crimes. If drugs like marijuana became decriminalized, the prison industry would lose a large chunk of its business. After all, who's going to fill all those empty prison cells and all those newly privately owned prisons being erected across the country? The other major player in the war on drugs is Big Pharma,
mm-hmm.
which stands to lose a significant portion of its business if marijuana is legalized as well. Marijuana, after all, is a powerful natural medicine that can eliminate chronic pain, balance brain chemistry, mimic the regulatory system of cellular physiology, and even treat cancer, among other things. Be sure to check out this amazing video about juicing raw marijuana for non-psychoactive medical treatment. That was an interesting thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, we have just about 5 minutes here, and I want to see what else we got. This freaked me out when I read this. University of Texas researchers have come up with a chip for a mobile device that can see through walls. All right.
Oh, I don't think I like that idea.
I don't like that either. It's pretty freaky.
Yeah.
And it sees through skin. It sees through everything.
As unbelievable as it sounds, researchers at the University of Texas at Dallas have created an imager chip for mobile devices, which would turn an ordinary cell phone into something which can see through walls, wood, plastic, paper, skin, and other objects. Using the terahertz band of the electromagnetic spectrum, the wavelengths of which fall between the microwave and infrared bands, the chip could signify a revolution in the surveillance capabilities of mobile phones. Along with the new chips like Broadcom's BCM4752, which is capable of providing ultra-precise location data. Combine this with citizen spying applications and the techniques which gently push people to conduct surveillance without them knowing what they're actually doing, patents from Google which allow them to collect the data from such chips, and the National Security Agency's new data center, and you have the penultimate surveillance state. Boy.
The research team connected two separate advances in science, the most untapped tetrahertz frequency range of the electromagnetic spectrum and cutting-edge microchip technology. For those who are unfamiliar or need a refresher, electromagnetic spectrum makes up all the wavelengths of electromagnetic energy, from visible light to radio waves to microwaves to infrared to ultraviolet and everything in between. Most consumer devices have yet to leverage the terahertz band, which means that this could be truly revolutionary technology, although some, might, like myself, might think that this revolution is not necessary at all.
Necessarily all that wonderful.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel uncomfortable with all this.
I wouldn't want anybody to have that.
We've created approaches that open up a previously untapped portion of the electromagnetic spectrum for consumer use and life-saving medical applications, said Dr. Kenneth Oh, an electrical engineering professor at the University of Texas at Dallas, as well as director of the Texas Analog Center of Excellence. The terahertz range is full of unlimited potential that could benefit all of us, he added, although I'm not quite sure how allowing cell phones to see through walls and thus erase what tiny shred of privacy we have left would benefit us at all. So he's thinking of medical kinds of things.
Yeah,
you wouldn't
want...
You could
see the medical factor, you know.
Yeah.
We could wave a
small device and
over
see...
somebody's
and
lungs
see if,
or somebody's
see
whatever.
If they have a growth or something.
Yeah.
That would be wonderful. The technology would likely not even be as expensive as one might expect. This is because the new approach would allow images to be created with the THC range signals without the need of several lenses or other expensive equipment within the device. This would not only reduce cost, but also size, making the technology something which could be realistically seen in mobile phones in the future. The University of Texas at Dallas Press releases notes that the techniques involved in the manufacturing of the microchip involved would also allow it to be applied to consumer devices. Chips utilizing the complementary metal oxide semiconductor technology, which forms the basis of a great deal of consumer electronics like personal computers, mobile devices, and high-definition televisions, game consoles, would make this technology even more affordable.
CMOS is affordable. And
that's complementary metal oxide semiconductor.
To make lots of chips. Can be used to make lots of chips. The combination of CMOS and tetrahertz means you could put this chip and receiver on the back of a cell phone, turning it into a device carried in your pocket that can see through objects. Wow. Thankfully, Dr. O sees seems to be, at least to a certain extent, concerned with privacy. This is evidenced by his team focusing on uses and distance of 4 inches or less, although this does not mean by any means that this technology could not be used at a greater distance when it is undoubtedly used by the government and military.
Well, we've come to right to the end of our show anyway. It's 9 o'clock now.
It's kind of a little longer article, but you can get to that by going to intelhub.com, right? That's a great site.
In the meantime, we want to thank you for being with us and for listening to us, and I hope you tune in to us tomorrow night and hear some news.
Yeah, and have a good night, everyone.
Good night, folks.